When men search for God, they are searching for everything. When they find God, they have found everything. The search for God is the unstinted bestowal of love, attended by amazing discoveries of new and greater love to be bestowed. All true love is from God, and man receives the divine affection as he himself bestows this love upon his fellows. Love is dynamic. It can never be captured. It is alive, free, thrilling, and always moving. The Father, man can never take the love of the Father and imprison it within his heart. The Father's love can become real to mortal man only by passing through that man's personality, as he in turn bestows this love upon his fellows. The great circuit of love is from the Father through sons to brothers, and hence to the Supreme. The love of the Father appears in the mortal personality by the ministry of the indwelling adjuster. Such a God-knowing son reveals this love to his universe brethren, and this fraternal affection is the essence of the love of the Supreme.
It's a very beautiful part.
Isn't it?
What page is
God the Supreme. We're all in one paper here.
Getting to the climax of the third movement.
The Supreme is not infinite, but he probably embraces all of infinity that a finite creature can ever really comprehend. To understand more than the Supreme is to be more than finite. Man can discover the Father in his heart, but he will have to search for the Supreme in the hearts of all other men. And when all creatures perfectly reveal the love of the Supreme, then will he become a universe actuality to all creatures. And that is just another way of saying that the universes will be settled in light and life. Men do not find the Supreme suddenly and spectacularly, as an earthquake tears chasms into the rocks, but they find him slowly and patiently, as a river quietly wears away the soil beneath. When you find the Father, you will find the great cause of your spiritual ascent in the universes. When you find the Supreme, you will discover the great result of your career of paradise progression. But no God-knowing mortal can ever be lonely in his journey through the cosmos, for he knows that the Father walks beside him each step of the way, while the very way that he is traversing is the presence of the Supreme. And then they talk about what would it be like if all this could ever really take place, and if the Supreme became actual. What would the universe be like if it were settled in light and life? The perfected grand universe of those future days will be vastly different from what it is at present. Gone will be the thrilling adventures of the organization of the galaxies of space, the planting of life on the uncertain worlds of time, and the evolving of harmony out of chaos, beauty out of potentials, truth out of meanings, and goodness out of values. The time universes will have achieved the fulfillment of finite destiny, and perhaps for a space there will be rest, relaxation from the age-long struggle for evolutionary perfection, but not for long. Certainly, surely, and inexorably, the enigma of the emerging deity of God the Ultimate will challenge these perfected citizens of the settled universes, just as their struggling evolutionary forebears were once challenged with a quest for God the Supreme. The curtain of cosmic destiny will draw back to reveal the transcendent grandeur of the alluring, absonite quest for the attainment of the Universal Father on those new and higher levels revealed in the ultimate of creature experience. It's the breakthrough to the second floor. You know, I've tried to visualize that. And I can visualize the slow mobilization of all seven cores of the finality. Little by little, the finality is trickling in quietly to paradise. And then, someday, by God, they'll pass in review. Maybe before the senior architect of the Master Universe. And they'll take off for the invasion of outer space. This will be the Paradise Expeditionary Force invading the first outer space level. But I passed in review. It's a thrilling experience. But can you imagine what it would be like for the first and conceivably the last time to see all finaliters mobilized on Paradise, passing in review?
You mean they won't take off for outer space until they're all mobilized?
I don't think so. I think it'll all be done at once. I don't think they're going to trickle into outer space. I think they're going to really set up not an Anzio beachhead, but a Normandy beachhead. They'll go in there with real power. What do you suppose it'll be like? You know, we can't conceive of an outer spacer beyond our concept.
What will our personality be like at that time?
Same as it is here, but everything else about us will be vastly improved.
But you remember that where personality remains the same right up to where it impinges on the borders of the absolute?
It's always the same.
On some infinite level.
Personality is permanence in the presence of change. You'll still be you. I'll be me.
Up to the borders of the absolute. We didn't understand that.
Well, the seventh dimension of personality is capable of sub-infinite penetration of the absolute. Which means that if this thing ever goes beyond an ultimate stage of development, we've been talking here about the beginning of the ultimate adventure. If there ever is a post-ultimate adventure, which would involve an exploring of the absoluteness of deity, we're not going to be left behind. We can embark. We can penetrate this absolute adventure in a sub-infinite sense. And I symbolize that by my own thinking by saying, let's say that the infinite participation in this adventure would mean to drink all the orange juice in Los Angeles. I can't do it. But the mere fact that I can't drink all the orange juice in Los Angeles does not mean that I can't drink some orange juice and keep on drinking orange juice day after day after day. I can participate from a qualitative standpoint, but I can't encompass it from a quantitative standpoint. This is what the old universal censor is growling about in the at the end of paper 10. It's exactly what he's talking about. I read it to you. Page 116. He introduces this by saying, while no single person of the paradise deities actually fills all deity potential, that's that circle up there to the right, collectively all three do. three infinite persons seem to be the minimum number of beings required to activate the pre-personal and existential potential of total deity, the deity absolute. We know the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit as persons, but I do not personally know the deity absolute. I love and worship God the Father. I respect and honor the deity absolute. It's a nice distinction. I once sojourned in a universe where a certain group of beings taught that the finaliters in eternity were eventually to become the children of the deity absolute. But I am unwilling to accept this solution of the mystery which enshrouds the future of the finaliters. The core of the finality embraces, among others, those mortals of time and space who have attained perfection in all that pertains to the will of God. As creatures and within the limits of creature capacity, they fully and truly know God. Having thus found God as the Father of all creatures, these finaliters must sometime begin the quest for the superfinite Father. But this quest involves a grasp of the absonite nature of the ultimate attributes and character of the Paradise Father, second floor of the firehouse. Eternity will disclose whether such an attainment is possible. But we are convinced, even if the finaliters do grasp the ultimate of divinity, they will probably be unable to attain the super ultimate levels of absolute deity. That's the third floor of the firehouse. And then he hedges. It may be possible that the finaliters will partially attain the deity absolute, sub-infinite penetration. But even if they should, still in the eternity of eternities, the problem of the universal absolute will continue to intrigue, mystify, baffle, and challenge the ascending and progressive finaliters, for we perceive that the unfathomability of the cosmic relationships of the universal absolute will tend to grow in proportions as the material universes and their spiritual administration continue to expand. He's growing faster than the finaliters are growing. That's what that sub-infinite penetration means, I think.
You mean the universal absolute is growing
faster? Yeah, we're never making. We never get there.
He's got a motorboat and we got a rowboat.
That's right. I think we'll attain the deity absolute as God the absolute, in some sense. But I don't think we'll ever comprehend the deity absolute, as we someday will understand the Supreme Being. And at some immeasurably more remote day, we will understand the ultimate of deity.
What does that last sentence mean? Only infinity can disclose the Father in them.
In other words, he knows we're never going to catch up to the universal absolute, and the Father as infinite is something on beyond that. We can go a long ways.
Never end, Tom.
We can go a long ways, and the place where we get stuck is the nicest place on earth to get stuck, because it's on the third level of the firehouse, and the reason we're stuck is there's no ceiling. There is no ceiling. We can attain something on the first floor because there's a ceiling, a limit. We can attain something on the second floor because while the ceiling is enormously high, if the ceiling on the first floor is 2 inches above the floor, then on the second floor, it's some 1,600 miles. You can't see the ceiling of the second floor, but it's there. We'll get there someday. But on the third floor, no ceiling. So we can never reach goal attainment because there is no limit on the third floor.
That sub-infinite penetration, isn't that just about being let in through the service entrance for a bit?
Sure. Sure.
Okay.
We get the same food that they serve up in front. This concept of the Supreme Being is not unique. In current theological speculation, there is the concept of a finite God. The speculative mind of man is almost driven to that concept. as he contemplates the imperfection of this world. It's perfectly obvious that no infinite God made this world. The kind of world that an infinite God does make is a Havona world, which is perfect and flawless. So the concept of a finite God is not new. But what is new is a finite God in relation to an infinite God. That I have read nowhere outside of this blue book. Ruth?
I was just going to say, 40 years ago in college, Dr. Parker, in my philosophy course there, taught
that. Sure.
Finite God.
Yes.
A growing finite
right.
God.
But he didn't teach also an infinite God.
No, that was the only.
The dual concept is unique in these papers. Mm-hmm. The association of the two.
Well, Mrs. Eddy, in her teachings, preaches that there is nothing imperfect.
Well, Mrs. Mary Baker's Eddings.
Glover Eddy.
Christian Science, let's talk about it a little bit. I thought this through in Atlanta. I was out with some of the faculty of Emory and I told a Christian Science story. And about halfway through I realized that this was going over like a lead balloon and that there was one present and I gave the story a decent burial. And after the quinding, it was my host's wife, Dick Joel's wife, who asked me to stay and I knew she was a Christian Scientist. And she said, I'm sure you aren't a prejudiced person. I said, I hope not. Well, she said, you were putting ridicule on Christian Science. Well, I said, I was, because to me, its claim seemed to be preposterous. And I said, let's talk about our metaphysics, our cosmology. And it didn't take but about 10 minutes to get to the source of it. She believes in only one form of energy. Not three. A good Christian Scientist believes in a kind of energy which is about 90% mind, 10% spirit, perfectly emulsified. You follow me? It's mostly mind with some spiritual overtones. Her whole theory is perfectly consistent with that belief. If there's only one form of energy, then there is only one set of laws which govern all things. And any deviation from those laws is illusory. It's maya, unreality in the Buddhist sense. These papers teach me that there are three kinds of energies and that there are three different sets of laws applying to them. So that if a saint and a sinner jump from my office windows in Chicago, they get six stories to fall to the pavement of Michigan Avenue. As falling bodies, they are things. They're in a gravity field. And if the saint prays and the sinner blasphemes all the way down, I think they're going to hit with identical foot pounds of impact because gravity knows not good or evil. Now, when they hit, they die. At which point, I think a different set of laws takes over as concerns Murancia and spiritual realities. And I think they may well move in entirely different directions. Let me go back to our thing meaning value. The Christian Scientist can't possibly see that. And the reason is they know only one form of energy. God is an impersonal mind spirit. And it is something which, in my judgment, is neither scientific nor Christian. It's a form of practicing illusion. It is a supreme rationalization. Any religion which denies reality is a rationalizing religion. And this one certainly denies reality. I was interviewing a Christian Scientist one time. I find them difficult to deal with because they've been brainwashed. And at a certain point, all logic departs, and you get the party line. And finally, in exasperation, I reached in my desk drawer and I pulled out a dagger I used to open mail with. And I reached for this guy's hand. Well, he did what any sensible person would do. He jerked his hand back, seeing that wicked stiletto. And he says, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I am going to cut you to see if you bleed." Well, he says, I will, but I shouldn't. I just had to get down on Pink Cloud 47. And I, so help me, I'd have cut him if he hadn't put his hand away. Let's turn it off, bud.
Dorothy's story about a Christian scientist is the best, though.
No, that's bad, it's only.
Oh, is that about the woman that moaning in the hospital?
Oh, no, not that one.
And the doc, and someone said, what, she's yelling, oh God, oh God, oh God, and the nurse said, why don't you help her?
Delivering a baby.
Yeah, and the doctor said, she's Christian scientist. When she yells, oh doctor, I don't see her.
I always like the story about the... We'll take off with that first then. This is our Friday routine, myth illustrations. Perhaps if I put frames around this, it would be easier to read. We start out in the upper left-hand corner, conventionally, with our fried egg, with the yellow and the white, and this is the hypothetical static moment of eternity before any actuals have come from potentials. And before even potentials have differentiated from the continuum of infinity, whatever those words mean. Here we pull the yolk out of the white, keeping the white shaded for identification. And this is the segregation of all that which is free will from all that which is not free will. And Betty, this is not untrammeled free will. Even here, there are some restrictions, because it would be constitutionally impossible for God to do the ungodlike thing.
I'm glad to hear that.
And the rules of compossibility from the paper on supreme involvement would also govern. As they say, even God cannot create a square circle or perpetrate evil, which is inherently good. And the word compossibility there means that when he creates a circle, that determines circularity in contrast to squareness. Even then, it's not a magical universe. The introduction of the intermediate circle producing the linked circles is in realization that there is still a relationship between the white and the yolk. And that middle circle symbolizes the universal absolute. And I always use linked circles to portray the three absolutes in contrast to concentric circles for the Trinity. To me, this is the picture of the absolutes. We put an A out there, which is not germane to the story at all. But it is from this level, I think, that the Father fragments. And that A stands for thought adjusters. Because you'll recall, this is still true. It never changed. This is still true. It never changed. This is still true. It never changed. These frames, which we think of as a sequence, I think we should think of as pancakes piled one on top of another. This happens to be the bottom pancake or the top one. It doesn't make any difference. Which is at one end of the series. This is a simultaneous sequential series. That's almost as good as the paper, simultaneous sequential. Here we start with our three circles linked. And now we have differentiation taking place within the yoke. Here we have the Father moving away from the Son, and at the same time giving expression to paradise, and I put paradise outside of the yoke, because the yoke is total deity. Paradise emerged from there, but paradise is not deity. Paradise has deity as a source, but it itself is not divine. And then, I think this is the personal level of creation. This, to me, would be pre-personal, which is why I think adjusters are fragmented at this point. In our last frame, it gets all complicated. We have the Father, we have the Son, we have paradise, and we have now the Spirit emerging from the Father-Son union and activating paradise to cause paradise to do two things. First, to produce Havona immediately, and second, to disgorge space potency, which is the stuff of the then uncreated universes, everything outside of Havona. And this space potency moves over to the Hoya the Egg, which is the unqualified absolute, which in the papers is defined as the revealer, regulator, and repository of that which has paradise as its source and origin. Paradise bestowed matter, or the potential for matter, and this bestowal took place just once in eternity. It's not a continuing thing. So all of the potential for all universes did come from paradise at this time. Up until about here, I would call the yoke the qualified absolute. Certainly up to this point. Here we're in transition. I don't have a good name for it here. But here, it's the deity absolute. If you ask me to be very technical, I'd call it the transitional absolute at this point. The papers use the term qualified absolute and deity absolute. Now, in terms of sequence, this picture is eternal. We have the Infinite Spirit and Havona. This is eternal. This is eternaler. This is eternalist. I have no names for this.
More eternalist, most eternalist.
Mm-hmm. One, two, three, many.
But in your thinking, the Infinite Spirit and Havona are coordinately eternal. The Eternal Son and Paradise are coordinately prior eternal. There had to be paradise before the Infinite Spirit could function. There had to be an Eternal Son to collaborate with the Universal Father in the production of the Infinite Spirit. And the Father is most eternal. Had this happened in time, this would be a proper sequential portraiture. It didn't happen in time. This is the dawn of the first universe age. This picture here I conceive as the zero universe age. This would have marked the universe age before the first universe age. These are negative numbers, so to speak, and there are no such things in actual reality. Yes.
Did you say the last one would be super personal?
I think so, Helen, if my sequence follows. Now, I offer this very, very tentatively. I don't feel at all sure of these concepts, but they say that God functions pre-personally, personally, and super-personally. Well, I'm quite sure that when he's Father of the Son, he's a person. He's not a pre-person. So I have to go back here in order to get a pre-personal picture of God. And of course, whatever he was at any time, he still is. He hasn't stopped doing these things. And it seems to me that adjusters would come here. If that's the case, if this is the pre-personal level, and I'm not sure that it is now, I offer this very definitely, then this would be the personal level. And if you say, well, why is this the super-personal level? I don't know, except at least we have a Trinity here, and a Trinity is not a person. I think my logic is quite shaky on that one point. But can anyone offer anything better? I don't think we should have adjusters at these two points. And quite obviously, I don't think we have them here. They should come as late as possible, as late as we can say we have a pre-personal picture here. Not a non-personal picture, but a picture which is in anticipation of personality. Still, here, God is the absolute person. God has yet to divest himself of absolute personality, which he does in the next frame, and that divestment is the eternal Son.
And he also gives the adjusters a home to live in.
Yes. This concept of degrees of eternity is not stupid. Let's buttress our romancing here with, I think, a quote which I think I can find. I can't find the quote I'm looking for, but somewhere in this book it says that the worlds of the Father were differently eternalized. They're all from eternity, but they didn't all come to being at the same moment. Speak of it in that sense as the qualified absolute.
Well, that would be the center circle.
No.
Oh,
that's the yoke. That's the yoke.
I see.
When the Father no longer fills the qualified absolute, in other words, when we have a Trinity, then I would refer to it as the deity absolute. The term.
So when you call the last diagram, that's the deity.
The term qualified absolute is used on page 13 in the section in the foreword dealing with the deity absolute, where it says, "We have at no time been informed that the qualified absolute is the equivalent of the infinite."
Are infinite and unqualified used in any way synonymous?
No. Except I think the unqualified absolute does have infinity of capacity to respond. In a sense, the deity absolute has infinity of capacity to respond along certain lines. As, for example, when the Supreme Being, for the first and only time, willed to the act of creation and Majestan was produced.
That's infinite capacity to respond.
Yes, yes. Let's read this section on the deity, on God the Absolute. There are many features of the eternal reality of the deity absolute which cannot be fully explained to the time-space finite mind. But the actualization of God the Absolute would be in consequence of the unification of the second experiential trinity, the absolute trinity, which is made up of the Supreme Being, God the Ultimate, and the unrevealed consummator of universe destiny. And of course, this trinity cannot appear until God the Ultimate has appeared, and God the Ultimate cannot appear until the whole master universe, including the fourth and outermost space level, has achieved perfection. This would constitute the experiential realization of absolute divinity. And this means the unification of absolute meanings on absolute levels. Meanings. But we are not certain regarding the encompassment of all absolute values. The suggestion here is that meanings could be achieved, but not all values might be achieved. Why? Because we have at no time been informed that the qualified absolute is the equivalent of the infinite. That's pretty obvious as we look at our third frame. It's only one of the three circles there. It's linked with everything, but it is not in itself everything. Superultimate destinies are involved in absolute meanings and infinite spirituality. And without both of these unachieved realities, we cannot establish absolute values. God the Absolute is the realization attainment goal of all super-absonite beings. Absonite is the second floor of our firehouse. Super-absonite would be the third floor. But the power and personality potential of the deity absolute transcends our concept, and we hesitate to discuss those realities which are so far removed from experiential actualization. Yes?
I don't understand super-ultimate destinies. Could you elaborate on that?
Our finite destiny is the quest for God the Father and the sometime knowing of God the Supreme. Our ultimate destiny is the quest for God the Father on another level, on the absonite level, and the sometime knowing of God the Ultimate. When we seek God the Father on paradise now, we are seeking God as sub-omnipotent, sub-omniscient, and sub-omnipresent. The ultimate quest for the absentite father is an attempt to understand God as omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. The super ultimate quest for the father is an endless quest. This we will not achieve. And here we're seeking him as super omnipotent, super omnipresent, and super omniscient. The subs have meanings, the supers don't. These are just words. This is just saying many, many. Let's go on reading. Since we've gotten into the absolutes, let's spend a little time with them. If we start out today with the absolutes, everything else will be easy, won't it?
Super ultimate.
Is absolute.
Well, if it's ultimate and if it's absolute, the super implies an overtone that we don't have in our.
That's absolute. Super ultimate is absolute.
All right, super absolute.
Super absolute is a contradiction of terms.
Super finite.
It's like saying super infinity.
Super finite would then be absinite.
Yes.
In this term, in this respect.
It could mean absolute also. It would mean anything above the finite.
Anything above
that could be two things.
Anything.
But there's only one thing above the absolute. Right,
finite.
God the ultimate and God the absolute are both super finite. But only God the absolute is super ultimate as experiential deity. Now, of course, the Father, Son, and Spirit are on all three of these levels. The Master Spirits are not super ultimate. They run on the first two levels of the firehouse. They run on the 2-inch scale and the 1600-mile scale, but not on the infinite scale.
What's that?
The seven. Seven master spirits.
All the seven master spirits.
They encompass all of the supremacy and ultimacy of deity, but not the absoluteness of deity. Well, let's read on. This is interesting reading. When the combined thought of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son, functioning in the God of action, constituted the creation of the divine and central universe, the Father followed the expression of his thought into the word of his Son and the act of their conjoint executive by differentiating his Avona presence from the potentials of infinity. And these undisclosed infinity potentials remain space concealed in the unqualified absolute and divinely enshrouded in the deity absolute, while these two become one in the functioning of the universal absolute, the unrevealed infinity unity of the Paradise Father.
Shouldn't your arrow then extend on to the universal, maybe?
No, not because that's only what came out of paradise. This is only space potency.
Oh.
I haven't expressed the other.
Oh, yes.
That took place within the yoke. You see, in this sense now, the middle circle in the third frame symbolizes the continuation of the first frame and symbolizes the fact that this has never changed at all. In a sense, the universal absolute is the fried egg, the original fried egg.
Universal
absolute's deity, but is functional on only the static, the potential, and the associative levels of total deity function. The universal absolute is not creative, evolutional, as concerns the creatures of the universe of universes. We'll get to that quote in a minute. In other words, what they're saying here is that these three absolutes constitute the bottomless wells which the creators are pumping to produce new things. When a creative spirit produces a group of seraphim, these seraphim come from somewhere. They don't come from nothing. When master force organizers come out into apparently open space and initiate those doings which eventually give rise to a whirling nebula, this nebula comes from something, not from nothing. And it's on these great reservoirs that they're drawing. If you will conceive of the three absolutes as the essence, as the, yes, they're the reservoirs of potentiality, then you can think of three absolutes of actuality: the sun, paradise, and the spirit. You have three energies. The sun is the absolute of spirit. Paradise is the absolute of energy matter. And the conjoint actor is the absolute of mind. And now we're thinking of two associations, aren't we? And we can call one the triodity of potentiality, made up of the three absolutes. And the other we can call the triodity of actuality: the sun, the spirit, and paradise. And the first source and center we can't classify as either actual or potential. We can call him original. And he balances these two triodities and governs, in the largest sense of that word, the transfer of reality from potential to actual. And this is how God the Supreme grows and all finite growth takes place. And this is how God the Ultimate grows and all absentite growth takes place. And this is the mass movement of the universe, which involves survival and which is distinguished from the minor retrograde motions in the universe, which are non-survival, or the reverse transfer of actuals back into potentials. The universe is just like our solar system. Almost everything that swings around the sun moves in one direction. But there are a few moons of the major planets. There's at least two, and there may be more, I've forgotten. They move in the reverse direction, hence the term retrograde motion. Non-survival is retrograde motion in the cosmic sense. You were going to ask something, right?
Well, I am searching for clarification in the way the papers use the term infinity. In their use of superlatives, they have special meaning. What is the meaning of infinity?
Infinity is used in several ways.
The I am. The first source and center.
The first source and center does not imply infinity as generally used, because God is functional on all levels. But the Father infinite implies that. The largest use of the first source and center implies infinity. You see, they use it in this way too. It's used as finality of meaning value.
A meaning value.
Maybe thing too. Would be infinity.
Yeah.
Infinity would encompass all of any one of these frames. In fact, infinity would encompass all of these frames. infinity can never be expressed in time, only in eternity.
Does it become reality?
It is.
Reality.
Ruth, I believe it is real in eternity. But it can never be real. It can never be actual in time. It can be real in time, but much of it must continue to be potential.
Yeah.
Because if you're in time, then there is a future. And the future implies further growth. If you are in eternity, there is no past future. And then infinity can be, but not in time.
Get dizzy with semantics.
Isn't it, though? Korzybski should be here. I mean, I've got a feeling for the non-temporal. I don't say that I have a feeling for eternity, but I do have a feeling for that which lies beyond time. Again, it goes back to a survival decision. When a human being, probably an ascending Maranchen would be a better way of putting it, makes a final choice to do the Father's will, that final choice represents the total consecration of that personality. It is an irrevocable choice. That's an eternal choice, because no quantity of time will alter the basic principles and purposes embodied in that choice. Time will only change technique of execution, but not principle. Now I understand an eternal choice. This is impervious to the passage of time. This is for keeps.
It's inherent in sonship.
Sure it is. Sure it is. Such a creature has made an eternal choice. He made it in time, but he's done something that is absolutely impervious to any possible corrosive effect of any quantity of future time. He just ain't going to change his mind. Now I understand eternity as concerns that choice. You can take number to help you. You can pick a large number. The choice still stands. You can double that number. The choice stands. You can square it, cube it, take it to the fourth power. The choice is unchanged. You can take a number tremendously larger than this number we've been working with. There's no change in the choice. Time has no effect on that choice. That's an eternal choice. The choice was made in time. It had an origin in time. But it has no ending in time. This last picture here is the picture of the first universe age. This is the age of Havona. This universe age had an end in time. It ended when our present super age of the super universes began, but it had no origin in time. It had no beginning in time. It does lie within our capacities here and now.
You read yesterday, some part here, the pages which I do not remember, perfectly wonderful
description
of eternity.
Yes.
Definition of eternity.
Simultaneous. Yes. It's probably Ruth in the paper on Supreme and Ultimate, which would be 118. And it probably is in the first section of that paper, but don't turn to it. Let's stay with the absolutes. So, we have these three triodities, these two triodities. Both potency of cosmic force and potency of spirit force are in process of progressive revelation realization as the enrichment of all reality is affected by experiential growth. And through the correlation of the experiential with the existential by the universal absolute. In other words, they're drawing. Everyone's drawing drafts against this tremendous bank of infinity. Force organizers draw draft. They get a nebula, a physical universe. Creator Son, Creative Spirit draw. Sight drafts. They people this universe. The life carriers function as channels, and life appears on the planets. Evolution takes place. This life comes from somewhere, you know. It just doesn't just happen. The Father enriches this creation with a bestowal of personality and relative free will. The Son pours out new spirit. Where was that spirit before it got poured out? The ability of the Infinite Spirit and His creative daughters to bestow mind, and of the Master Spirits to bestow cosmic mind. There's no limit to this. Where does it come from? There's a tremendous artesian outpouring of new actuality. No change in reality, merely a transfer of that which is real from the potential to the actual stage. And of course, this involves going through a very interesting gray area, which I have christened the zone of becoming. Yes. No, no, that's down on the level of actuality. That's us. We are not real actuals, are we? Finaliters are, but humans aren't. We are not either the good guys or the bad guys. We're wearing gray hats. Neither white nor black. We are in the zone of becoming.
Your zone of becoming then includes all evolutionary growth.
Of course, of course.
Absolute too?
Yes, I think so. I think so. We're in the zone of becoming. We can go either way. We can go positively or we can move retrograde because we have, as Betty will stoutly defend, that power of choice. There is a correlation here of the experiential with the existential by the universal absolute. He affects a linkage not only of the two absolutes, that's his horizontal linkage function, but he also has a vertical linkage operation, which we haven't attempted to portray here. You see, this is all the third story of the firehouse up here. Underneath this are two more stories. And it is the universal absolute that constitutes the steel structure of the firehouse and keeps these stories from collapsing one into the other.
Not the center pole, though.
No, that's the universal father. He's on the walls.
Yeah.
I think of him there. And him is the right word to use. For the unqualified absolute, the word it is very proper. By virtue of the equipoising presence of the universal absolute. Now, what is an equipoising presence? Well, I think the best illustration is the counterweight to an elevator. How about that? And how many of you have ever seen a counterweight to an elevator, in a modern elevator, that isn't a squirrel cage?
Or a French elevator.
Mm-hmm. You know it's there, but you don't see it. And it's what makes it easy to move that elevator. The universal absolute is the counterweight to all sub-absolute reality. He makes weight for it. Or, better still, do you ever stop and think of the tremendous down pressure of the second floor of the firehouse on the first floor?
Yes.
We got, the first floor is only 2 inches high. The second floor is 1,600 miles high. It must contain an awful lot, you know. Why doesn't the bloody thing collapse? The universal absolute acts as a kind of a hydraulic jack, reinforcing that ceiling and keeping the absonite from crushing the finite. Now listen, if we've got troubles between the first floor and the second floor, how much more troubles do we encounter when we hit the third floor? Because that isn't a 1,600-mile thing. That's infinity. So he's really got a job to keep the firehouse from collapsing, right? All right, that's what equipoising presence means to me.
That's your vertical now.
Yes. By virtue of the equipoising presence of the universal absolute, the first source and center realizes extension of experiential power, enjoys identification with these evolutionary creatures, and achieves expansion of experiential deity on the levels of supremacy, ultimacy, and absoluteness. And now we can better understand what the universal censor was saying when he said, "We perceive that the unfathomability of the cosmic relationships of the universal absolute will tend to grow in proportions as the material universes and their spiritual administration continue to expand." The more stuff you load on these floors, the bigger the counterweight has to become. There's more equipoising to do, hence more presence of an equipoising nature.
Kid to add a gravity.
Yes.
And he's drawing on these columns.
Yeah. Yeah. When it is not possible fully to distinguish the deity absolute from the unqualified absolute, their supposedly combined function or coordinated presence is designated the action of the universal absolute. Remember that the universal absolute is deity, but unfathomable deity. The deity absolute seems to be the all-powerful activator, while the unqualified absolute appears to be the all-efficient mechanizer, activator versus mechanizer, what of the supremely unified and ultimately coordinated universe of universes, even universes upon universes, made, making, and yet to be made. Making is the zone of becoming. The deity absolute cannot, or at least does not, react to any universe situation in a sub-absolute manner. Now, they're trying to describe the habit patterns on the third floor. Every response of this absolute to any given situation appears to be made in terms of the welfare of the whole creation of things and beings, not only in its present state of existence, but also in view of the infinite possibilities of all future eternity. This deity absolute is going to react to the problems of Urantia in terms of unimagined creations, a tremendous distance beyond the outer perimeter of the Master Universe. Because the deity absolute is living in the everlasting now, in eternity. The deity absolute is blind to time. The architects of the Master Universe see the end from the beginning as concerns the Master Universe. I don't think they see too much beyond that. They may speculate beyond it. But within that domain, they pretty well know, because they are the blueprints. And they interfere with things. They make them come out right. Let's pause for a second. We're trying to get a feeling now for the interaction of transcendent time with time. Personalized thought adjusters are the untrammeled, unassigned, and sovereign stabilizers and compensators of the far-flung universe of universes. They combine the creator and creature experience, existential and experiential. They are conjoint time and eternity beings. They associate the pre-personal and the personal in universe administration. Personalized adjusters are the all-wise and powerful executives of the architects of the master universe. They are the personal agents of the full ministry of the Universal Father, personal, pre-personal, and super-personal. They are the personal ministers of the extraordinary, the unusual, and the unexpected throughout all the realms of the transcendental absonite spheres of the domain of God the Ultimate, even to the levels of God the Absolute. And then they make this very real. When the planetary veranda deck observer of Urantia, the Most High Custodian, who not long since assumed an emergency regency of your world, asserted his authority in the presence of the resident Governor General, I visualize him just walking in saying, "I'm taking over." He began his emergency administration of Urantia with a full staff of his own choosing. He immediately assigned to all his associates and assistants their planetary duties. But he did not choose the three personalized adjusters who appeared in his presence the instant he assumed the regency. He did not even know that they would thus appear, for they did not so manifest their divine presence at the time of a previous regency. And the Most High Regent did not assign service or designate duties for these volunteer personalized adjusters. Nevertheless, these three omnipersonal beings were among the most active of the numerous orders of celestial beings then serving on Urantia. Now look, this veranda deck, who I assume is still resident on our planet, or if he's not, I assume his successor is resident, he's pretty far above us. When he assumes a regency, he's taking things over because of problems down here. And I can't visualize his purpose and intent. But you know something? I think I'm a lot closer to him than he is to these personalized adjusters. I think the architects of the Master Universe are more mysterious to him than he is to us. They're farther away. Yes?
Well, does the deacon ask, does he have anything in there?
I don't think so. I think this is the architects of the Master Universe. They're seeing to it that the blueprint works out.
The deity is so far beyond that,
yes.
He can't see any of it.
He isn't conscious of time. He just reacts. But the architects of the Master Universe are purposeful in relation to time. The Deity Absolute is blind in relation to time. The Deity Absolute cannot deviate from the eternity pattern of reaction. Nothing else has any meaning to the Deity Absolute. The Universal Father escapes all limitations. He's the center pole in the firehouse. He understands timelessness, he understands transcended time, and he understands time. He's conscious on all three levels. The Deity Absolute is conscious on only one level. The architects of the Master Universe, I think, are functional on the absonite level and are perfectly aware of and can interact with the other two levels. Now, this is reasonable. They occupy a midpoint, don't they?
Through the personalized adjustments.
Yes. The Deity Absolute is that potential which was segregated from total infinite reality by the free will choice of the Universal Father. Please note frame 2 on the blackboard. That's what this is talking about. Within the Deity Absolute, all divinity activities, existential and experiential, take place. This is the qualified Absolute, in contradistinction to the unqualified Absolute. But the Universal Absolute is super additive to both. in the encompassment of all absolute potential. That's the third circle, yes. Our cartoons on the blackboard are reasonably accurate. They're good symbols.
In the second frame, which is which?
The unqualified absolute has got white hatching on it throughout. I identified one circle. Right. The universal absolute is the middle circle, starting with the third frame.
And would you call that the deity, the second frame right there, the yolk?
This is the qualified absolute.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And the deity absolute is a semi-synonym for the qualified absolute. Prior to this situation, I like to use the term qualified absolute. From this situation on, I think the term deity absolute is better. The term qualified absolute, in my mind, signifies the Father still filling the potential of absolute deity. The term deity absolute, in my mind, signifies a situation in which the Father, as a person, no longer does this only as the Trinity. It is the Trinity which fills this potential at this level. At this concept level, it's the Father. It's God. The term Father is hardly appropriate because we're thinking of a pre-Son situation. Always remember, the looking glass is here. Any attempt to go back of this, we're going through the looking glass like else. The unqualified absolute, this is the second most difficult concept in the paper, the unqualified absolute. You know what the most difficult concept is? The universe, the first source and center. We don't think of it that way because the Father concept is pretty easy. That's only one facet of the first source and center. Don't kid yourself. The first source and center is the most difficult thing of all.
Are we going to take that up at all?
Yes, we will. We'll talk about all the absolutes. The unqualified absolute is non-personal, extra-divine, and undeified. Why? Because in our second frame, all that which could be personal, divine, and deified was removed. This is the residue. The Father fractionally distilled infinity, and he fractionated out the personal, which includes the pre-personal and the super-personal, the divine, and deity. The unqualified, I think of it as the residual sludge. The unqualified absolute is therefore devoid of personality, divinity, and all creator prerogatives. Neither fact nor truth, experience nor revelation, philosophy nor absonity. That's a peculiar use of the word absonity, absonite. Are able to penetrate the nature and character of this absolute without universe qualification, hence unqualified.